Hello and welcome to another brand spanky new episode of the Listening Party Podcast, a conversational music podcast where every episode is a different theme. New episodes are released the first Monday of the month. With me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Denise.
Hey.
And Denise, this month we have a little bit of a different intro. Please elaborate.
So we recorded back in May, and we just want to make sure that we give you up-to-date information. We reached out to Alina and Joey of Magenta Moon, spoiler alert, this month's guest, and they had a few updates for us. Well, just a couple. They just released a new single, All the Doors, which is streaming everywhere, so go check that out. And if you are listening to this the day that it comes out, Magenta Moon is playing tomorrow, Tuesday, August 5th at 8 p.m. at the Barrel in Sherman Oaks. So if you hear this episode and you're like, I want to go see them, go check them out tomorrow.
Yes. And just a few editing notes on my end. The Neighborhood Birds were especially chatty the day that we recorded. So you'll get a lot of that in the background.
They were banging.
They were. Oh, this is true. This is true. I didn't think about it that way, but yeah. Also, I forgot to note the timestamp, but there's a part, I think, toward the end of the episode where you hear the honking of one of our wonderful street vendors.
Yeah.
So you just hear like, honk, honk, honk. And it's kind of hilarious because I think it was one of the, not, the episode doesn't get too serious, but it was one of the moments where Elena's making like a pretty thoughtful point, I guess. And then, yeah, in the background, you just hear the honking.
I know.
So that's what that is. Sometimes I wonder if people hear the noises in the background and then they get confused. Like, you know what, when you're listening to a song and it has like a
siren?
Cop siren or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're like, oh my God, I'm getting pulled over. I wonder if they hear that. They're like, oh my God, like the ice cream man's outside. Anyways, I apologize if that has some kind of a Pavlovian effect for you or something. Enough of that. Let's get to the episode, shall we?
Yep.
And Denise, let all the podheads know who's joining us this month.
Alrighty, we have 110 podcast favorite. We've also featured them on the Listening Party twice. They are local musicians, Elena and Joey from Magenta Moon.
Whoop whoop! Bah, bah,
bah, bah. Yay! Finally in studio.
Yeah, this is a dream come true for me. Not to make it awkward. Nah, just kidding.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. We're Magenta Moon.
Yeah, welcome to the show. We're so excited to have you.
I have so many questions since like the first time I had you guys like on the LPP, I think. I was like, I really want to get them in studio. And I don't know when that was, but it's been a while that I've like taken up the courage to like ask you guys. We've had Vincent Brew on since like who we met through you. And I was like, dude, I got to invite. I just have to like do it, pull the trigger and like invite you guys. I guess I have so many questions because we've been to a couple of your shows. I never have the timer. It's always too loud to like ask you like where are you guys from and how. Do
also,
you
it'd be weird just to like be interrogating them like
when
they're you know trying to socialize with everyone. Be like, no, sit down. I have a lot of questions for you.
I'm socially awkward, so this is the way that I like socialize with people. It's like you want to be on a podcast. Yeah,
works for me.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, the goal is to always make everything into art, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So if you can turn your what you think of as a weakness into something that other people can consume and enjoy, that's the best.
I love that.
So Denise has a little bit of an icebreaker for you guys to kind of get to know you.
Can you please share the story of how you guys first met?
I had my freshman year of college, I was going to school at Johns Hopkins and I had met this person, I don't know if I can remember his name, at like a pre-campus visit. He was like friending people on my computer, on my Facebook, you know, like this was like 2013.
Yeah,
so you know you would be like on each other's computers adding people, and I ended up becoming like internet friends with the person who ended up being Joey's freshman assigned roommate, and we were really good friends. Joey's at school in Boston at Berklee College of Music.
Nice.
And so I was friends with his roommate, and like his roommate came to visit and we were pals. And then I was like, I really wanted to go see a show in Boston. I'm giving a lot of backstory here.
No, that's good.
Okay. Yeah. I want to know it all.
Go for it.
I was
sitting
really
here thinking, can I go even further back and tell my side of the story?
I can, but it'll start sounding really woo woo, and I don't know. I need that in my lore yet.
In my last lifetime.
But I was really into this band Beirut, and
like, oh hell yeah,
oh
dude.
Yes,
you know Beirut,
yes.
And I think Zach Condon had like some ear problem, and so we never thought he was going to tour again or something. But he announced this tour. I think it was my junior year of just before the start of my junior year, and my college best friend and I were like both huge into Beirut, and I'd never been to Boston, and I was like, and we were like, we could go see him in DC because we were living in Baltimore, or we were about to go travel in Europe for a semester. We were like, we could go to Boston, just like say fuck it and go to Boston. So we went to Boston. We crashed on my friend's couch, and they had lived in this beautiful brownstone in the Back Bay. They weren't no longer in the dorms anymore. They're like living in a house. Mm. And Joey was living at that house.
That's right. I had the smallest room in that house, and I was still paying the same amount as everybody else.
Oh, that's whack.
Oh, and he's bitter about it.
I'm ready to fight still.
You want to name some names?
It's unnecessary. You'll see it all in the police report.
But we both smoked cigarettes in those days.
Yeah.
And
no more.
No nice, more.
Nice.
We're like healthy now.
I wish I still smoked cigarettes, but they hurt my stomach too much now.
Yeah.
Gut microbiome's too important.
Sometimes I'll just hold one so I can still look cool. But
Yeah. You don't light it or anything.
I can't. No.
You got to get the gum ones, the
right.
bubble gum ones.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would be great.
Like the kitty cigarettes.
Yeah.
But I was standing on the front fire escape, like my first time in Boston. I think it was November 4th, 2015. Just in case we needed to know things.
We're going to fact check all of this.
The leaves had all turned. It was just so beautiful. And I like saw Joey come up, and he had two guitars, I think.
Yeah. I was in a like 12-hour lockout recording session that day with my friend Moritz, who actually now has a record studio here in town.
Oh, nice.
And we still work together sometimes. But back then, it was like six songs or seven songs in 11 hours or something like that. And I was so exhausted, and I had all this gear to bring back. I'm lugging back two guitars.
Probably on a skateboard.
Yeah, probably. I think I might've just walked actually like a mile home, something stupid. And
with two guitars.
I remember I was so tired, and I just wanted to go home and go to bed. But my roommate had told me, these people are coming to visit, and so we need to show them a good time. So will you hang out with us their first night in? And I was like, sure, whatever. But when I got home that night, I went, oh my God, these people are in the house. I forgot. Fine. I'll go hang out with them for a little bit.
Yeah.
And like, it's just such a nice house. There's like all these leather couches. I was like, how are these 20-year-olds living like this? I don't know. It was so cool. I think they just had a big party, and there was this like stripe of chalk paint around the house, and all these people had like, they had a Halloween party.
Yeah.
So that people had drawn all these different like Halloween characters, and it was just like so festive. And just where it is, there's like tons of college kids just like walking through the streets. But I was smoking a cigarette, and in order to get onto the fire escape, you had to climb out the window. Mm-hmm. So Joey comes in and sticks his head out the window to be introduced to us, and I like could, the light was the shadow was on his face, so I couldn't see his face fully, but I'd never had a moment so clearly like this in my life, where I just like had, I call it multi-life recall now, but like it was like, I remember at the time I was just like, in those 2 seconds I saw our entire lives together. I didn't know like the details or what it was like moment to moment, but I just was like, that's it. And I had like sworn men off like a month prior. So I was like, I'm going to wait till I'm 40, because that seemed like really old at the time. I was like, I'm going to wait till I'm 40. I'm just never going to settle for anyone. And then like he just waltzed into my life when I least expected it.
Hey, you were in my apartment already. I was just coming home.
Yeah. And so, but I mean, that was like just when we met, when we stayed up until like 6 a.m. talking.
I remember... I had this feeling then, after being in school for a couple of years, and I don't know if it's like this at every school, but when I was at Berkeley, a lot of these kids sort of follow a trend, and they just all started seeming and feeling kind of the same vibe to me, every person that I worked with or met in class. And especially some of the recording I was doing that night I met you was for, honestly, more than one artist who I would work with them, record these songs, write these guitar parts or whatever, but then the music would never come out because they'd abandon the project. Maybe they're too early in their development to want to commit to it or whatever, but I remember feeling kind of frustrated in that I couldn't get any product out. And then when I met you, I said, what do you do? And you went, oh, let me show you. And you pulled up poetry on your phone that you had written that was ready to go. And you showed it to me and I was like, this is what I'm talking about. It was so refreshing. And that multi-life recall, there was something about that too, where when you showed me the work, I was like, this is what I've been looking for. But I didn't even realize that you were what I was looking for too. I just thought it was a cool thing that you had poems ready to go. And I wasn't used to that. It's really cool.
Yeah, and Joey was just like so cool.
I mean, he still is.
I mean, he is still, but like, he like was hand rolling cigarettes, which I'd only seen like annoying hipsters do.
And
but
broke he made people.
He made it look so cool. And he had this like black denim jacket. And
stolen.
This like coif of like curly hair that's pulled on his forehead. I was just like, who is this? You know, it was like, I was so jaded at that point. I'd been like dating men like 10 years older than me when I was like, you know, like 20 and like whatever. And so it was like, and then we found out on that first night that we were born 15 days apart. Mm-hmm. We're both like, I'm the second of five. He's the third of five. So we had just like a lot of similar things going on. And we were talking until like 6 a.m.
Yeah.
And couldn't stop talking.
That's crazy. One thing that I guess kind of struck me is the fact that you were so willing to just show him your poetry right off the bat. Like,
yeah.
Were you doing like open mics or anything like that? Where you were just like, because that seems like such a private thing. But I guess it kind of goes in hand with you just saw your whole life with him. So you were like, this is my person. I can show him everything. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. I got my degree in the writing seminars at Johns Hopkins. So it was like, my degree was in poetry. I was in my third year, but like, I was in a lot of writing workshops, not open mics really. Honestly, we didn't really start doing open mics period until we moved to LA in 22.
Right.
And I started doing some poetry open mics there too, but my poetry is very visual. So I would always have to make little screenshots on my computer so I could look at it. Cause I would always like want to look at my poems.
Yeah. You handed me your phone and it had a poem on it that started with an Erykah Badu quote. And I read that. And then I got into the poem and was like, this is fantastic. And it was perfectly presented right on the phone. And I didn't know a lot of poets. I knew a couple kids at school who were musicians that also wrote poetry on the side. But, you know, it was always kind of poetry, song lyrics, general writing that I saw. I never saw poetry written out, packaged well, and presented to me in a way that I went, this makes sense and I love it. So you had to actually physically do that for me, which was cool. And it was new.
And then so before that, you had just done poetry. You hadn't started any kind of musical endeavors or anything like that?
My mom always called me Lena Bird because like I would just like was singing from the time I like came out. But I always had such a like tortured relationship with it where I always felt like adults wanted me to sing all the time. And I hated being heard when I was singing. Like I wanted to just be like singing to myself and like, I really wanted to be on Broadway when I was little. My first AOL Instant Messenger handle was when I was like 8 years old. It was like FTR Broadway Star 1. I loved the musical Wicked. I wanted to be in Wicked so bad. I was like really into it. And I did a lot of musical theater. And I took piano lessons, played flute in the band, you know, like stuff like that. And I started taking voice lessons around, I think, 12. Because I had a grandfather that would pay for voice lessons because he wanted me to sing the Star Spangled Banner at sporting events. That was like kind of the context.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for it because it really, I mean, a lot of those voice lessons that I was introduced to are like classical. Like, so I was like singing a lot of like arias and stuff, which was cool. But I wasn't that into it. I was also a dancer. I grew up dancing.
And acting, right?
Yeah, acting some. But by the time I was in college, I wasn't really singing anymore. I had taken a lot of voice lessons in high school, but I went to like this tiny high school in Florida. Like my graduating class was 15. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was like really suffocating. So by the time that I like got out and I went to like, I was at a university in the Northeast. I guess Baltimore is not technically the Northeast. It was Northeastern to me from being from Florida. Yeah,
it counts.
I was like, I don't know. I was like kind of like just like laying back. Like I wasn't really trying to dance. I wasn't really trying to sing. I was like, but poetry, when I found it, I was in like freshman year. When I found it, I was like, I started out as pre-med and someone like told me should take this introduction to fiction and poetry class because it's easy and it'd be like an easy distribution. But I was partying a lot and I was like, it was the only class I showed up for.
Yeah.
It was like at noon so I could make it. And then like, I also was like, I would do the homework. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh my God, I like this.
Yeah.
And, the department there was really awesome at the time. Lots of really cool grad students. And I was just like, this is a whole world. And there's like apparently a track in academia that you could like teach poetry. Mm-hmm. I was like, great. I could just write poems. That was the first time I was like, oh, I could live off of art. Mm-hmm. Like there's a way that it's like manageable. And so I kind of just was, I was really into the like privacy of it too. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until Joey and I were together. When we were first like living together, he was like, you're a musician. I was like, no, I'm not. Stop saying that.
You were like, no, I'm not. I only took voice lessons and piano lessons and sang and dance.
Yeah. I was going to say, I was like, it was a pretty musical beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. We're like jamming. I'm like playing on this little keyboard.
She's playing keys and singing. She's like, I can't do this. You're literally doing it. But.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Magenta Moon is the first time you were in a band. That's like your band.
Yeah.
Like you were never in a band before, like in high school or anything. Oh, like a band like you would put together.
No, no. Joey was.
I've been in so many bands.
Yeah.
My first band, it was just me and a friend of mine, Calvin. Our band was called Silence in Disguise.
I like that.
I love band names. Like,
hey, yeah, band names are always good.
We hated that name. So we changed our name to Uzaru.
All right.
Which I think is like a Dragon Ball Z reference or something. I never got it personally. That band lasted maybe like a year. Mm-hmm. But I was in so many bands. My next band was my own band called The Galley Boys, which was named after a sandwich from this place in Ohio where my grandfather lived called The Galley Boy. So yeah, that was appropriate. And then after high school, I had a bunch of different bands in college. There was Dream Talk. There was Business and Pleasure was a big one for me. That was my first Spotify release, was with that band.
Oh, nice.
It was such a big deal for me at the time. Mm-hmm. I never...
Shout out Wilma Gang.
Yeah, shout out W Mac. Still friends. He still makes music. I still get notifications on Facebook that they're going to shut down our Business and Pleasure page because I don't ever, you know...
You haven't logged in, you haven't posted anything.
Exactly. Yeah. It's still there, though. But I never really wrote music freely the way that we did in Magenta Moon. That was new too. Like I was in these other bands, I always felt like a guitar player. Mm-hmm. And I would contribute and write and sing, but there's something really different about by the time we were making Magenta Moon, it just, everything was kind of busted wide open and I was really ready to write the stuff that I had in my head.
Yeah, and you'd been putting so much work into production because, like, he was studying sound production engineering. Mm-hmm. And, like, so when we met, he was, like, always on the computer. Like, and, like, always on the computer making beats.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff.
A lot less guitar that day, those days.
Yeah. Tons of SoundCloud channels, this one. Oh, yeah. I love listening to them, yeah. Really, really interesting stuff.
Your digital footprint is quite large.
It's pretty large. Yeah. The hard drive's even worse.
What is it? Is it Bazga Blood? Is that the more recent one?
Yeah, Bazga Blood is my most recent alias.
Uh-huh. And then there's JP Daily was like in 2014, we did this project where I wrote a sonnet every day and he made a beat every day. And then I named his tracks and then my cousin made art for all of them, which was really cool. But we were kids then.
Yeah, but that's kind of the inklings of the band.
Yeah, of Magenta
was that project was like, because when we actually started writing, we would do this project where I would write basically two instrumental songs with a chorus and a verse, and Elena would write a poem or lyrics, just free write, and then we'd show each other what we'd come up with and try and mash them together. Mm-hmm. And we wrote a lot of our early stuff that way, which is really the same setup as the whole JP Daily idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll get to know you guys even more. So, but before we get to that, why don't you guys let us know what theme you chose and why?
We chose For Better or Worse because for a lot of reasons. I mean, I came up with the idea. Joey just went along with it.
It immediately resonated with me.
But like a lot of what I was thinking of is, I mean, it's obviously like one of the wedding vows, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that we're thinking about a lot because we're getting married this year.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
But as I was thinking of that like phrase, I was thinking about all forms of relationships and like loyalty and like times like right now when we're in such political upheaval, or at least it feels that way. And there's like tons of horrible things happening all the time, at least that we're aware of. That was really making me think about like making art. And I think one of the first things I realized is with this regime change that I needed to like set some boundaries so I could make sure I could still make art, because I just believe that making art, no matter what, is activism. It doesn't have to be like specifically political in order for it to be activism, like just continuing to express yourself freely through art, regardless of who's in charge or who's saying what or who's funding what or whatever, or how the economy is, like that's activism. So I think in many ways I was thinking about art and just like life and maybe like existing as a citizen or existing in a country or, you know, living in a world so racked with disease, genocide, hatred, you know, like we still are here. And there are these times that are darker, but we're like, if we just made art when it was fun and everything was easy, like we wouldn't get through the dark times. I'm rambling a little bit.
No, you're good.
But another thing that really occurred to me early on in this, like since Trump was in office, was, and just this like fascism wave, which has been coming for a long time. Like, I don't blame that just on the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. I think that the American government is just flawed in concept.
No, it's perfect.
But I was realizing, I was like, I keep wanting to like, so in fascism, they always take this term, like we have to go back to this time when there was a golden era, right? Like that's a really big thing. And that's where the Make America Great Again thing comes in. And so I think a lot of times when we want to push against that, we're like, no, things were terrible. But like really these waves of fascism, they just come throughout time. And I was thinking about it and I was like, if I just hate the past too, then that like will create another wave of fascism. The way that I can fight this is by going back and seeing what artists were making through similar times of trial, because mm-hmm. they were giving us the blueprint to get through it now, because it's art that gets you out of those places.
Right.
And so it was very inspiring to me when I had that realization. I was like, I need to go back and find the antidotes there too. Mm. And I can take back our history too, because there are good people. There are, were mm-hmm. people that were freedom fighters throughout every human civilization, right? And so that kind of circles back to that idea too, like, you want to be in the archive when it's good and you're looking for good things, like to read a poem at someone's wedding. Or you also want to be in the archive when it's like, how do we deal with people disappearing? And like, how can we find some art that helped us get through that?
When they say silence is violence, right? Mm-hmm. It can be both in terms of your creativity or in a political sort of sphere too. It's like, there's this big concept in the book, The Artist's Way, where you want to just create as much as you can and not even worry as much about the quality as you think. You just want to get it out. And then you kind of go back and look at what you have. But you are who you are. And so you can't really do a whole lot to change what's going to come out of you as your art. You just have to make it. And the worst thing you could do is keep your mouth shut and not do it in any way, because when the world is in trouble, you got to talk about it and you got to make the art. And that, like you're saying, that's how we're going to figure out what's going on and figure out what we want to do. Otherwise, you're also not going to have any songs.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to have anything to rock out to when you're trying to like make right. things better.
Yeah.
No, yeah. And actually, this morning, you know, you wake up and you're like, let me see what's going on the Instagram or mm-hmm. whatever. And yeah, there was just this guy that popped up and he was like, oh, yeah, you know, I was trying to find, I was reaching out to people and asking them like, hey, like what contemporary, you know, socially conscious music is there for like younger generations? Because I guess he was kind of arguing that maybe the reason why a lot of younger people aren't getting as involved is because there isn't that kind of like contemporary like musical movement, I guess, to rile them up and right. get them all together. And so, yeah, so people were just kind of sharing contemporary artists.
Oh, that's
so,
really
like,
cool.
Yeah, so like Gary Clark's This Land album was mentioned, and Dead Pioneers was like a Native American band that's also like pretty mm-hmm. political and stuff.
Cool.
So, yeah, so that was pretty cool. So, yeah, you make a good point that it's like, yeah, you still got to keep making art and, yeah, trying to make a difference the best way you can.
Yeah.
And I was kind of feeling a little bit down this week because not to get all like, oh, sentimental, but I was just kind of... This is like the third episode we've recorded in like 7 or 8 days.
Yeah.
So wow. It just, with seeing the news and all that, it just kind of felt like, does this really, like, am I, like, this just seems so silly to just be like, let's go record a podcast when shit's so crappy. You know what I mean?
Right.
But that's the devil talking.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because that's exactly when you need to record a podcast.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Not to say that, like, this is like the most important thing, but yeah, but so, but it is that. Balance, right? Where you just kind of like, am I really like, is this really what I should be focusing my energy on? And then a lot of times I do think that where it's kind of like, maybe because social media has made us so like self-involved, that's also what's keeping us from getting more involved with like more social causes.
Right.
So yeah, so then it does feel like a battle of like, instead of recording a podcast, should I be out there in the community trying to do something? And it's a balance, right? You could do both.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
I also think doing something a little more long form is really different from social media. Like that's something I've been separating a lot in my life is like, okay, maybe instead of thinking about what content to make, I should just write a song that I like then perform a few times and then record a demo and then record the song and then pay an artist to make some album art and then release it. It's like, not only are you cultivating your community, but you're like specifically taking time to do stuff on your own that's more long form that is less of like an immediate gratification.
Yeah.
And you know, we love to think so much about the product, especially in America, but there's a really important piece to just being a person that makes a podcast that changes who you are. And then you're walking around as somebody who knows how that works and what goes into it and how am I going to think about the next episode. Then when you're out in the world, you are really taking it all in and then you're going to repurpose it in an artistic media. It's really cool. Like having the podcast out or having our songs out is great. And then we can give them to people. But it's also the process of just making it makes you into a more whole person. And the more we do that, the stronger every community gets. And then we can really do anything.
Well, let's get out there, everybody. So before we start sharing songs, if you'd like to share a song that fits the theme, hit us up via email feedback@lppod.com or slide into the DMs on Instagram @thelppod. Joey and Elena, if people want to get a hold of you, get a hold of the band, how can they do that if they want to share some of the songs with you?
You can email us booking@magentamoonparty.com. And then we also are pretty active in our DMs on Instagram, which is @magentamoonparty.
All right. And Denise, if people want to share some songs with you, how can they do that?
@dfurmusic, DeeFur music on Instagram.
All right. And we've been doing pretty good so far with the sound quality, I think, but you know, the times may change. So, you know, we do record this from our living room, so you might occasionally hear the sounds of the neighborhood. So just close your eyes and pretend you're here with us. And with that, we'll get right down to the songs. We like to make a guest sandwich. So Denise and I take turns going first and then the guests go in the middle. So I think it's my turn to go first. So I took it very literal in like the more marriage kind of thing. So I'm bringing a song from a band that I first heard about when someone submitted one of their songs, Fools, here for the podcast back when we featured listener suggested songs. this was the first song that popped in my head when Denise told me what the theme was for the episode. And it's one of my favorites of theirs. It's off one of their most recent albums, if not the most recent, I think. But it feels like it was a while back now, so I'm not sure if they've put anything out since. But it's from 2018's Expectations. It's a pretty quiet, simple track. So, you know, you might need to lean in and listen a little bit. You know, the people at home, if you're driving in the car, you may need to turn it up. This one is The One by Austin-based Wild Child.
I'll make the coffee if you cook the bacon. I haven't had a lot to eat.
I like it black, no sugar. We don't have any bacon, but the sentiment was sweet.
We've been together as long as I remember, but we only make love in the spring. We don't mind staying up all night, 'cause we talk a lot sweeter with booze. Never can remember even half of the fights, but you never forget when I lose. You're not the one for me. You're not the one for me. Said you're not the one for me. You're just the one that I choose.
All right, there you go. So that was just a little taste. Yeah, I don't know. I love that song. I love their voices together. And it's just such a, I don't know. To me, it's like such a beautiful song. I remember the first time I heard it, when they get to the chorus, it's kind of one of those songs that like gets me choked up a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm just like, ah, that's so beautiful. I don't know. I love it. It's a different way of looking at love, you know, besides the way that they kind of make it up to be in movies, or sometimes where it's just like the very passionate kind of love where you're just like, oh my God, like butterflies all the time swept off my feet. This is more like I guess like a little bit more of like a realistic look at it. You know, people that have been together for a long time and you're just kind of like, yeah, it's not always the best, but that's kind of what it is. I don't know. I love it. It's a good song. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I really loved that it started out like it, you thought you were going to get a little bit more of a like sentimental thing. They're like, I'll make the coffee, you make the bacon. But then it got into the like bittersweet qualities mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. were really refreshing. Really beautiful sound quality. Did you say it was recent?
It's from 2018.
So, yeah, it's okay.
Relatively recent.
It was giving me like 2010s vibes mm-hmm. for sure. But yeah, a little more recent.
Very haunting.
Yeah.
Intimate. It super really cool. Gives me the impression of people that have been together for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that kind of vibe takes development and you can really feel it when you're listening to the music.
I love Wild Child. I love what's her name?
Kelsey Wilson. Yeah.
Like her solo band, the what is it?
Sir Woman
and Bitch is like one of my favorite like albums. And but yeah, like I love this song because it just gets into like the nitty-gritty of stuff and just like sticking with someone like not when shit hits the fan, but even when things like get rough, like it's not all like, you know, glitter and sunshine or whatever. I don't know what the saying is, but
yeah. Sunshine and rainbows.
Yeah. Sunshine and rainbows. There you go.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you got to put a little work into it. And I know like people that, you know, they couldn't get through that, like those little bumps and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, you got to work together. You got to give a little bit, like it's a team effort here. So I don't know. I enjoy this band and I enjoy the song and yeah.
So another reason why I chose them is because I just thought it was interesting, kind of a little bit relatable. You know, they're like they're together as a couple, but they're also in a band. And their music is more like folky, indie, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as Denise mentioned, Kelsey Wilson kind of broke off and has a side project called Sir Woman that's more like funky. And when she was kind of doing interviews for, you know, promoting her solo material, you know, you get a lot of those questions. A lot of times we're like, oh, like, is Wild Child done? Like, are you just going to do this now? And she's like, no, but, you know, I have a lot of songs that I want to sing that, you know, don't necessarily go well with ukulele or whatever.
Right, yeah.
And so I was just wondering, Elena, you mentioned that this is kind of the first time that you've been, like, in a band that's, like, your own band. Is there anything that either of you guys kind of create together that you're kind of like, oh, like, I have this song, but it's not really, like, a Magenta Moon song, and you kind of wonder if you could do it separately or something like that? I don't know.
There are almost more songs uh-huh. that aren't Magenta Moon songs yeah. than are.
Yeah.
I think. Like she was saying, I make a lot of hip hop beats.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just have that side of me. We did one album. It was like a 7-track album, technically our second EP album thing that we put out back in 2021. That was me trying to incorporate hip hop beats into the Magenta Moon sound. And it was cool, but we kind of went back to guitars and bass and drums and that kind of a thing for where we are still now in this maybe second phase of the band. I still love making electronic music and hip hop beats and stuff, but it goes a different direction from the other stuff we do with Magenta Moon.
Yeah. I mean, like Joey said, together we write probably 40 to 50 songs for every song we release.
Yeah.
It's just like, we're very picky about what gets released under Magenta Moon, that it's like part of that like trajectory that we see for that project. I haven't thought about having a separate musical project. I'm not necessarily not open to it, but I have a book that I'm writing of poems, multiple books. And then I also paint. So I have a lot of other things that I also do, but, when I think of songwriting, occasionally I'll write something by myself, but usually songwriting is a thing that we do together that I love doing together. I really felt like when I met Joey and we started spending time together, he gave me back music in this way. But I had never seen myself having a career in music until we were together. So I don't usually separate it. I mean, I have no idea how things will progress, but...
Another interesting thing that we used to do more often was sort of this jazz duo vibe, where I would play keys and you would sing, and we'd do old jazz standards and stuff like that. You know, we played private gigs we just used to do that for fun too when we were first kind of playing music together. Very different vibe. So I think when we started writing songs on guitar, it's like, let's just lock into this for a little while and see what we come up with. But we had all these different angles that we used to mess around with, and they still come back sometimes.
Yeah, when we picked the name Magenta Moon, we really picked it to be with that the Magenta Moon as a project could be very dynamic. Our first album was really jazzy, but also sounds a lot more like some of the stuff that we do now. Then our second album was, like he said, more like electronic hip hop beats. We wrote a third album that's unreleased called Paul Rudd's Robot Girlfriend. That's like a noise punk album that we made when we were drinking a bunch of absinthe.
Oh, geez.
And just stream of consciousness writing. And they're really fun, super funky. But so Magenta Moon to me is very versatile. It can turn into whatever it wants.
Yeah, I think it's still changing, which is really fun.
To kind of touch back on something you mentioned, you said that you're really picky about what gets released as Magenta Moon. Would that be one of the reasons why some of your older stuff has been removed from Spotify, or is there another reason for that? Or
yeah, we had two albums on Spotify, our first two albums, an 11-track. Album called Rapid When It Happens, which is more rock guitar focused, and it's like you said, a little closer to our current sound. And then the second album, 7 songs, much more electronic, lot less guitar, and it's fun. You know, sometimes we still play songs from those two releases live. Those first two we did by ourselves in our apartment in Portland during the pandemic, and it was just us with a laptop and an interface and a mic, basically. I think I didn't even have a guitar amp. I was just plugging straight in, and so different. But when we moved to LA, 2 years later or something like that, we started playing with a full live band, real drums, shout out P-Sticks, real keys, shout out Broadway B. And it just felt and sounded so different that we thought, we're going to be recording these songs more professionally in a studio with the real instruments, and it just has a different energy to it. So we decided to pull the first two albums from Spotify. They're still available to purchase on Bandcamp.
Yeah.
It was really honestly kind of freeing to just say, let's just focus on the new sound, put those out and create a really cohesive vision. And we're about to put out our 7th track. since then. Mm. So it's been really nice to just kind of rebrand without fully rebranding. Just let the new songs speak for themselves and save the old other stuff for later.
Yeah, and we've always talked about putting them back eventually, possibly maybe remastering them, remixing them or something. But
5th year anniversary re-release.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe a straight to vinyl, yeah. Nothing else.
Oh, yeah, there you
I'd
go.
Be interested.
Yeah. All right, with that, who wants to go first, Elena or Joey?
I think the song I picked might go well after yours.
Okay, yeah.
Sounds perfect.
Yeah, the song is Dollar Store by Ben Queller, featuring Waxahachie. Is that how it's pronounced?
Yes.
I was not familiar with either of these bands. I mean, I think maybe I'd heard Waxahachie before, but I can't remember how it came up. It was my algorithm for sure. Mm. But it was a different song. I think Ben Queller on this album did a song with maybe Flaming Lips, and I'm a pretty big Flaming Lips fan. And then I was like, huh, this is really interesting sound. And then I clicked on Ben Queller's page and listened to this one, or it might have rolled through, I don't know. But it was so earth shattering to me when I heard it. But yeah, let's give it a listen. Right. I think it's pretty new. Yeah. I think it was this year.
Yeah, that was a banger. It was a little bit of a longer clip because I kind of wanted to get to that climax in the song.
Right.
Yeah, I know. So interesting that you said that you never heard of him before, because I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, Ben Queller, I don't think I've ever heard of this guy before. So when I was getting ready for the show, I went on Spotify, and you know how it tells you, oh, you like so many songs from this artist or whatever. And I guess I had heard him before. Mm. So in a way, that's kind of like the... I don't want to be like an old man, but when you have access to so much music all at once... And it just pops up in the algorithm. You're just liking things left and right. And you're like, oh, I guess I like that. That's cool. Whatever. And I always try to put them in my deep dive playlist, because I'm like, oh, I want to go back and really dive into the catalog, right? I think that playlist has 400 songs in it or something. And there's a handful of people that I've actually gone back and listened to. So all that to say that, yeah, I think it is kind of... It's great that we have it, but it's also...
For better or for worse, am I right?
Yeah, there you go. Bam, bam. You're a pro.
it's all but yes, coming together.
I also had a question for Joey, since you mentioned that, you know, you went to school for like sound engineering, that kind of thing. So in the mix, you could barely hear Waxahachie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like, she's very, like, in the back. And, like, I think the first time Denise heard it, she was like, I didn't even hear the other person. Like, it's just...
Right.
Like, obviously, that was a choice. But if it were you, would you have put her a little bit more in the front? Or
you know, I probably would have thought to do that as a default. But I think they chose to kind of bury her vocal as a specific move that just works to serve the song better. Mm-hmm. That's the thing people always talk about is... It doesn't really matter what your background is or your technique or whatever. It just, you have to make the choice that fits the song the best in the moment. And there's no amount of like engineering experience that will change that. It just has to be, I think it sounds better when you can barely hear her vocal. And it's there, I think they're singing just the same part, but she's up an octave or two. Mm. And it just haunts me. Mm. It's so pretty and I wouldn't want to change it.
It's like the quality of a song that makes you want to like turn it up, right, you know, you like keep wanting to turn it up. And then what I love about the song is you're like, oh, I want to hear more. I want to hear more. And then like that end, like when they come back with that final chorus, it's like,
yeah,
I love to turn the song up really loud in the car and just let it like wash over me. Like, I feel like it just like,
I just wonder if they wrote the song together and if they recorded it together and which point. I know that at one of those points during the whole process, they went, oh, yeah, because it just feels so good. It's such a banger.
It's really interesting. This one came when I first was thinking of like songs I liked right now. This was on one of the lists. And so I think a lot of like this song is a lot where I got the For Better or Worse concept from, because I was like, I loved this song so much. I started reading, like I went and read Ben Queller's thing on Spotify, you know, like Spotify is my favorite social media. Mm-hmm. And I'm not like a Ben Queller expert, but what I did get was that his teenage son, who is also an artist, recently passed away. And this album was him dealing with that. And so it's really interesting because like there is this like sadness in the song, and there's also like these sweet moments like whisper every dream to her, and it's like thinking about at least like I project this onto it, that it's like him and his partner dealing with the loss of their son and like and how they're dealing with that, and which works with the theme a lot. But I loved the way it was inherent in the music, and I think in terms of grief, it really shows how there are like these brighter moments, right? Like in life, you like grief is almost like this physical thing that just like washes over you at times, but you have like lighter moments, and then you like almost where you're forgetting how much you're in grief. Cause otherwise you wouldn't be functional at all.
Right.
And, but then there's also like, I love that like heavy ending, because for me, that's like when you're choosing to like use your will to like you were saying before about like in a relationship, like when you're in a relationship, you're orbiting. Sometimes you have to get apart before you can come back together in order for the togethers to feel deeper. But that's like, for me, that ending is like the willing to get back to the place where you're together instead of choosing to isolate, which I think we need a lot as a society. And I love when you just like throw something heavy in there to just like kick down the door to be like, we're like, fuck it, we're going for it. Mm-hmm. And like,
I also love that it's the same part as before. Mm-hmm. They just do it loud.
Yeah.
And he goes up the octave and he scream sings it. It's kind of like when you're listening to cumbia or something and the same thing comes back, but slower. Or the metal track goes into the same thing, but in halftime. It's like, okay, we thought about it, we worked on it, now let's go out and do it. It's the vibe.
Hear it gently, and then we're going to beat you over the head with it.
Once more, but good.
Yeah. Denise, what do you think about it?
I really enjoyed this song. It cut me deep in my bonza, as I like to say. I'm going to throw it out there. Reminded me of Modest Mouse. I'm not going to lie, like the vocals. And then especially when it came back like heavy. But yeah, I was just a little disappointed because I was looking forward to the Waxahachie part.
Yeah.
And then shout out to Everyday Destruction Show that was on a podcast, was on the LPP, but those episodes aren't up. They introduced me to that band. I really loved like her vocals and stuff. And then I was like listening and I was like, wait, where is it? Like, I don't even hear it. And then Rod's like, no, I think it's like background. And so I was like listening to it again. And I guess it's just really low in the background or my hearing's going bad. So in that sense, it kind of reminded me of Good Woman by Cat Power with Eddie Vedder in the background. But you could hear him more. But I think like when you hear that, like when I had first heard that song, I remember exactly where I was driving down the freeway and like those vocals kicking in and just like chills just running down my spine and my arms. And I was like, ooh, just turn it up louder a little bit. Not like for me. Because yeah, I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Anyways, it was a good song.
Good pick, good pick. One last thing I'll say about it is kind of it does a really good job of like building tension when it goes like the first couple of times that they sing the more part was like more, and then he repeats it again, and then they hit the kick pedal, and then you think it's going to build, but then it just kind of quiets back down, and then finally it does have the nice payoff at the end. So yeah, it's a great song, great song.
And that guitar riff.
Yeah.
So good.
So good.
Alrighty, so I thought you guys were originally from Oregon because when you guys sent in the clip for the 110, you said you were in Portland at the time, like making music. So I just like assumed you guys were from there and then came down here. What inspired your move to California, and how would you say the music scene is in Oregon to California? Like if you can compare.
Well, we moved to Portland right before the pandemic hit. We had gone on a 2-month road trip of the whole country, and we're looking for a new place to live. We had been in the Midwest before that. Sick of the Midwest, wanted to move out to the West Coast because we'd never lived out here. I've always been in love with Los Angeles since I first visited a long time ago. So I really wanted to move out here, check it out. We hit the LA leg on our road trip and decided that it just wasn't happening. Didn't know where to move, how to find the right neighborhood, how to find the place, the jobs, whatever. So we kind of just kept going. And I thought, you know, maybe I'm not supposed to live there. Ended up in Portland. We were there for 3 years. And that's where we did start the band. So love Magenta Portland. Moon is from Portland.
We love you, Portland.
We do love Portland.
What a beautiful place.
Such a beautiful place. Just amazing culture, the food, the local businesses. It's just
The air, the spring water, the quiet.
Everything's green. There's so much visual art. The music, I don't know if it was part me, part us, and part pandemic, and part Portland, but we had a harder time finding other musicians and places to go play early on. Of course, it's in the pandemic. We were in the pandemic too, so a lot of places were shut down, and that really limited our options. But after being there for a while, we were like, let's go back to California and let's see how it feels right now. Cause we were, I think, kind of itching to move on to a new place after being there for 3 years.
There's also no sun.
Yeah, there's no sun. That gets old. So we came down here to visit, and it was just right. It was the right time. I think we probably subconsciously knew that if we came down here, all of this was going to happen. Within the first 2 months, we had the full band.
Nice. Oh, wow.
After looking for that for years in Portland. And I'm sure we could have found something different there eventually. And I know a lot of great bands come out of Portland, and we just had a different experience where it was much more isolated and just the two of us working on these songs and recording alone. So it was really different once we moved down here. Everything just kind of took off.
Yeah, and I'm so grateful for the time that we had, just the two of us there, to really like work on some stuff together.
Absolutely. It's a perfect combination.
But it felt like when we moved down here, like we just kind of like, it clicked into like our real life. And I love how community... And again, I know tons of people have a different experience in LA. Like a lot of people feel isolated here, but like from the beginning, like our first week, we went to the unurban open mic, and it was raining, so there was hardly anyone there, and we weren't even going to play. We were like, I don't know if we want to play an open mic in LA.
I'm not ready. Like,
we should scout it out. And then they were like, oh, will you guys please play? There's no one here to play. Are you musicians? And then they made us play like 10 songs.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
And we had so much fun. And they were like, go to Trip and go to these places. And we just met all these people and then met our band at the open mic. We met Broadway B, who's a great like pillar of the music community. And just like everyone that we met was so nice. I couldn't believe how many people are interested in new music here.
Yeah.
People that want to come out to shows, that want to, that are inspired to start their own projects or work on their own projects.
You and I both have lived in so many cities and so many states at this point, and I've never been somewhere like LA where people just will come out to the show. We met a guy at a bar, told him that we were in a band, told him we were playing a show next week. And then you think, you know, why did I even tell him that? I guess you always got to plug the band when you can, but
yeah.
He showed up to the gig.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't even have to remind him or anything. And he comes to every gig now. And there are a lot of people like that, that I'm just amazed at how willing and open people are and how into the local music people are here. Mm. It's really cool.
Right. And like, I mean, LA gets such a bad rap for people being fake and flaky, which mm-hmm. there is a lot of that, of course. I mean, I think that's everywhere. But what I really see in LA is like, you're just kind of like entering a lot of different rooms, right? Like you're just like in your car and then you're in a room and you're in your car and then you're in a room. And then there's just like a bunch of people and you know pretty fast if there's someone there for you. Like mm-hmm. I always say that their faces like shine gold. If I'm supposed to meet someone, I like know pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love entering different rooms and meeting different people and inviting them to the party I'm throwing. That's like the life I want to live.
Yeah.
So I'm so happy to be here. I'm happy to be in the sunshine. It gets cold in LA.
It does.
Colder than I thought, maybe. I mean, this was a cold winter, I think, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it. I love the scenery is gorgeous. There's just always something I haven't seen, even in the neighborhoods we live in.
Like
there's always something. There's so many scenes. There's so many people that you can hang with. Like I love it.
No, yeah, I love hearing that because it's so sprawling that, you do hear a lot of like, oh, like you're 30 minutes from everywhere, but it's like, no, not really. Like if there's traffic, it's going to take you a while.
Yeah.
Right. So that's always kind of like a deterrent, at least for us, whenever it's like, oh, like so-and-so's playing here, so-and-so's playing there. And it's like, ah, and then the parking and like this and that. But then you do run into a lot of people that are like, no, I'll go, I'll check it out. So that's great. That's great that you guys feel welcome here. And seeing as to how you mentioned you've lived all over the place, does it feel like this is a more stationary place, or are you guys already kind of getting the itch to kind of move on?
So I always thought moving to LA was going to solve all my problems. And when we tried to move here in 19, you know, soft tried, and it didn't quite work out. We ended up in Portland. I kind of let go of this dream I had of living here and, you know, being in the band and playing the music and being around the palm trees and the beach and everything. I was like, you know, I don't actually need all that. I'll just let it go. Mm-hmm. And I'll just fully be happy with where I live in Portland now and commit to it. And I think, like, just mentally deciding that I wasn't obsessed with moving here anymore and I didn't need it to do anything for me. That's when it was like, okay, now you're comfortable being wherever you are and you actually can move to LA. So I think now I don't really have that itch to keep going. Probably because I think this is a great fit for me here. I love my lifestyle right now and everything, but also I just mentally had to get there and say, stop living with one foot outside the door. Like, it doesn't matter how many times you move, you're still the same person, and you got to figure out what you want to do wherever you are. The place is not magical. You know?
Yeah. No, yeah. And
magic is within.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. People that aren't from here, I feel like, move around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, at least a lot of the people that we know, it's like the people that were born here, they kind of tend to stay here. They might go out, you know, for school or something like that, but then they'll come right back and they're like, oh, yeah. So I'm always interested to find people from elsewhere. So I think that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we are very happy here.
Yeah.
And like, I think we plan to be based here, probably travel, tour. If someone offered me like $10 million to move to Paris, I probably would do it.
If they twisted your arm, you're like, all right, I guess I'll go.
Make it 11 mil.
But I think the only other places would be like out of the country. Sometimes I'm like, it's expensive though. What if we just like bought a house somewhere beautiful in Mexico and all of our artist friends could come hang out with us there. You know, that's nice to think about sometimes, but I do really like being like in the thick of it here and not having to be in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think like Frank Sinatra said, I think I'll unpack my bags and stay for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, now he's staying forever at Hollywood Forever Cemetery. That's
right. Yep. All right. Joey, let's get to your song. Let's know what song you chose and why.
So I chose Tried and True by Ween. Ween has become my favorite band over the last like 2 years or so. Listened to them here and there my whole life, but a couple of years ago, I just started listening to their albums in their entirety. And my God, they have so many different sounds and yes. feelings and textures. And the songs are always surprisingly deep because they seem so silly so much of the time too. But this track, Tried and True, is from their 2003 album, Quebec, which was the first album that they did with an indie label after being signed to a major. So they went back to indie and they just got real deep with it. Real like kind of interesting and different. But yeah, maybe we should just listen.
I've heard Ween like here and there, and I don't know, I guess it's a lot to unpack or whatever. I don't know if I like this band or not.
Yeah.
Because every song I heard, like, it just sounds different and it reminds me of another band. So, yeah. Like Thin Lizzy, the Beatles, Elton John, even like a little bit of STP, and I know they're an older band. Mm-hmm. And like this song, I was like, is he trying to sound like Jason Segel in Forgetting Sarah Marshall? Like, like, which is basically like a Dracula or something.
Right.
Like.
Yeah.
And then, and I couldn't figure out if he was being serious or like, or not, because there was that line and I asked Rod, I was like, could you smell my hole? And I was like, in my head, because it's me, I was like, what hole is he talking about? And he's like, no, like W-H-O-L-E. And I was like, oh. And I was like, well, either way, that's like intimate if you want someone to smell either hole. I don't
whole
know.
Life.
Any hole.
Oh, yeah, it's such a funny pause there because he does say, can you smell my whole life? But he goes, can you smell my whole life? I'm always joking that I feel like this song is from the perspective of a dog.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's a good one.
That is pretty good. Yeah. I'm going to go back and listen to it now.
I love that you pointed out that line though. Gets me every time. Mm-hmm.
I think it's on their first album, liner notes. There's a little paragraph they wrote where they say Ween is gospel music.
Mm.
And there was this, I don't remember exactly how the story goes. So you have to look it up, but basically the Boognish is like this demon god spirit that they said appeared to them and gave them the seed for all the music that they were going to write. So I think they are half joking and half serious all the time.
Yeah.
I think, and that's kind of why I think this goes with the theme of for better or for worse, is like, it just comes out like that. And they've always said that they're really careful, like we are, about what they release, because they're one of those bands that has just thousands and thousands of hours of recording. But I think, like, it just, it's very provocative in the way that you're laughing, but you're also like, this reminds me of something else, because it's kind of like halfway in the door most of the time. It's very strange, and it always makes me think, and it always makes me want to listen to more, which I think is like really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm on the same boat with Denise, where it's just kind of like, I never really know what to do with the band, just because I'm like, yeah, everything sounds so different.
Right.
But I think that's a good quality to have. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're definitely like a little bit of shitheads.
Yeah.
Like, that's like kind of like the vibe I get. Like, they're kind of like, you know, they're like a little, it's like, we don't want to be what you want us to be. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because they started so young. And they're brothers, right? Gene and Dean Ween.
They're not brothers, but they...
They act like they're
brothers. Pretend they are, yeah. Okay. They say they're an old married couple.
Yeah, which also really works with the theme.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, forever. I don't know. Joey's been trying to get me into Ween for a long time. And obviously, I've always liked Ocean Man because, like, I like SpongeBob. But this was the song that... You played for me recently that got me on board. Like, Joey's been on the Ween train. And true. I've been like, I don't know, which happens a lot. But this song, like, the lyrics, we started playing it together too, like, you know, just like in our room, just like working on it. And the more I was looking at the lyrics, I was like, oh my God, there is like so much here. Mm-hmm. Like, it just starts to unfurl in this way. Mm-hmm. And I love like the simplicity, but the depth that they do. It's almost like meditation music, but then there's like this element where they're like super sarcastic.
Right. I mean, they're pitching their vocals down. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It sounds weird.
So it's just like an effect on the vocals? That's not...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they do that a lot. Mm. Like, a lot of their early stuff, the vocals are pitched up really high, and it sounds super weird.
Yeah. You guys mentioned you're now getting into Ween after Joey's kind of been like, come on, you got to get into it. And at a recent show you guys played, well, at the time this is released, it would have been a few months now. But we recently saw you guys play a gig with Vincent Brew for their record release party for the Vincenzos. And you guys did a cover of Baby Bitch, I believe.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, you guys do a few covers when you guys play sets and stuff. So do you guys have any like rhyme or reason as to like how you pick what song you want to cover? Or do you just kind of go like, hey, this is a good song, let's try it out?
How do we pick them? What's the criteria?
I feel like I'm usually somewhere and then like a beam of light hits me. And yeah. Like this one. But like, we have to know the energy of the show first.
Right.
We usually always like have the set list for the show.
Yeah, we book the show. And then we pick what cover we want to do at this venue, kind of. Mm-hmm. I don't really know why.
And we always, like, selfishly want to do deep cuts because, like, we listen to deep cuts most of the time. Mm-hmm. But then we're like, but no one's going to know that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we usually end up picking, like we did Float On by Modest Mouse, even though, like, Polar Opposites is, like, one of my favorite songs ever. But, I mean, I think that's gaining traction these days, but most people only know Float On or maybe Ocean Breeze Salty or Dashboard. But we try and give, like, this, like, halfway point between, like, what we're into, what we think would sound good with the band, and then, like, what the audience will enjoy. And I think a lot of that for me is like, if I'm going to have to memorize all the lyrics of someone else's song and sing it, and we're going to have to get the band to do it, like, I have to have enough passion for the song at this time in my life to do a deep study in it. Because a lot of times after I get to the point that I can cover a song in a show, I'm like, ew, I don't want to listen to that song ever again.
Right.
Yeah. So I kind of need to be like obsessed with the song.
Yeah.
And my favorite is when... Like Big Star by like 13 by Big Star, which we do a lot, especially like open mics. If we like are randomly doing an open mic, we'll do that song. That song for me has only gotten better with memorizing it and learning it. Like it could, it comes back in these cycles, like your own songs, right? But I love when songs are like that. And Baby Bitch is one of those. Like there's a lot in there too. It's also really flippant, really rude, but like it also has like,
it's mesmerizing.
It's so perfect. And I was joking when we did that, that I was like feeling that way towards my dad. And it's like, it's like such a, you can like take it into your own really well, which I love about that song.
I love what you said a second ago about how they really are deep studies in these songs. And I think we kind of pick them because they're gonna change the way we sound as a band. Just by learning that song, you know, you stretch towards somebody else's musical vibe. And then it's really cool. You go back and listen, and it's like, wow, after we learned how to play that Smashing Pumpkins song, we keep playing the rest of our set, and there's a little bit more of an edge to it now. Because, you know, we kind of worked on that sound a little bit. That's something I love.
Yeah, like deconstructing a song like that, you really get down to like the nitty gritty, and you're like, oh yeah, like this is how all these parts play together. Like I don't play anything, I don't do anything like that. But every, like, you know, we have music instruments all over the house, and then so every now and then I'll be like, oh, let me see if I could try to learn to play like this little like bass riff or something. Yeah. And then you just kind of learn like, oh shit, like this is so like intricate, and you don't really hear that when you're just listening to the song as a whole. So yeah, I think that's interesting that after you guys do a deep dive on it like that, you can't help, I guess, but to kind of pick up on some of the influences, I guess, or
absolutely
have it change the tone of the show, I guess. That's great. All right, Denise.
Yes.
We're down to the final stretch. Let us know what song you chose and why you chose it.
Okay. I forgot my runner-up. Do you remember what my runner-up was?
Oh, that's right. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. You guys also had a couple of honorable mentions, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Do you guys just give a little bit of like, oh, yeah, this is the song I chose?
Yeah, I'm having trouble remembering.
Let me see.
I can look at my notes.
Father John Misty and the Talking Heads.
Yes.
All right.
Oh yeah,
making come between us.
Yeah, making Flippy Floppy and then Buddy's Rendezvous. I have been like, I used to hate Father John Misty.
I'm still there. I think I don't hate him, but I'm just like,
No, I was like, I want to burn down Father John Misty's house. Is like how
you
I
know
felt.
That the guy doesn't have a house. He lives in a school bus somewhere.
I used to be like so, and I'm a really big Lana Del Rey fan.
I was gonna say, yeah, it's like, yeah.
And so like I was always like, ew, why is this dirty hippie in Lana Del Rey's video? So I was really anti-Father John Misty. And then I think Nancy From Now On started making its way into my algorithm. But this was like also, I mean, honestly, I had a lot of opinions about artists because of like people I knew in college that liked those artists.
That happens.
I was just like, I'm constitutionally against this person, this artist. But then like, and I just loved the first line of Nancy From Now On that's like, oh, pour me another drink and punch me in the face. I just like, I love singing that. And so it really, yeah, right. It's so beautiful. Touching. And then it's really interesting because Lana covered Buddy's Rendezvous, but I might have heard it at some point. But I think I had listened to enough that it came through on my algorithm and I was like, this is a masterpiece. I think that song is really, really beautiful. And it's more like a relationship between a father and a daughter. And so that was like kind of interesting to me as like exploring this idea of like stretching family or like when things are bad. And I think the whole idea is that it's like the father's been in prison and he gets out and is like trying to reconnect with his daughter. Not that it always has to be so neat and tidy, but that was really interesting to me because I also felt like it's hopeful, but it captures like the bittersweet taste of loving someone, like, which is life, right? Like just like that, that's like the depth there.
Yeah.
And then for your song, Joey, you had gone with a Talking Heads.
I love the Talking Heads.
Yeah.
They're so funky for a bunch of white British people. It's incredible. I mean, just that song too. Really, it's just like David Byrne has these moments where I can tell he's just overtaken and he's just yelling. I don't think he can even control it really in the early Talking Heads album. So when he's screaming, nothing can come between us, it's like he's
that's just a really good David Byrne.
He's feeling it in his whole body, you know? And so I think that's like, it just, it seemed to go with the theme too. And and kind of connect some dots. Like, you know, he has to do it, mm-hmm. is the feeling, for better or for worse. It's going to happen. He's going to yell at you and he's going to do those crazy dance moves. It's just, he's feeling it. Yeah. And that's what it's all about. Doesn't really matter what it means or how it looks. Like, I always say any data is good data. All data is good data. Because, like, even if something bad is happening, something's still happening. And if it weren't happening, nothing would exist. And we wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
So it's like, exactly. It doesn't really matter what happens. For better, for worse. Everything's for better, technically speaking. Like, I just want more of everything that exists. Talking Heads are very maximalist in that way.
All right. But Denise, I'm sorry I interrupted you. So go ahead. Take us home.
Oh, my runner-up was Squeezebox by The Who.
That's right.
Great song.
We saw Tenacious D at the time, and at the Who tribute, it was like the Who Rock Honors at the Pavilion. What is it?
At the
Poly Pavilion.
Poly Pavilion. Yeah.
On UCLA campus. And so there was a bunch of bands doing, like, Pearl Jam and Foo Fighters, and Flaming Lips, actually, doing Who songs, right?
That's
like,
super cool.
Before the Who came on. Yeah, that was a cool show,
yeah. It yeah. So fun.
It was an awesome show, and Jack Black and, well, it was Tenacious D, they did Squeezebox, and I just remember, like, Jack Black singing that Squeeze Me Like You Do, I'm So In Love With You line, and I just, like, felt that when he said it, like, I don't know if it was, like, dedicated to his wife or maybe, like, Kyle. Like, I don't know. Like, yeah. Was, like, that was just, I felt it so much. So whoever that was dedicated to, you just, like, felt it.
Yeah, yeah. He really channeled the emotion.
Yeah, channeled that emotion. And it was beautiful. And then that song, like, and Rod and I play that in the garage or whatever, just, like, for us, like. Yeah, Rod's on drums and me. It's like two chords, I think.
It's a pretty easy song to play. Yeah,
I could do this one. But yeah, I love that song. But anyways, but I went with I Would Find You by Oceanator. And I don't know how I came across this band. I thought maybe Rod had sent it over to me, but it's been on my Emulate playlist for years. Like maybe like 2 or 3 years. And it came out in 2020. And like I feel like that's when I made my Emulate playlist. So maybe it's been on there for like a while. But I love this song. Like there's like a darkness to it with like a light. I have no idea what it's about. My interpretation was that maybe there was like a love affair going on because it talks about like being in the dark and in the shadows. And then she talks about just like, I will find you. Like, and I just want like you, because all I've ever wanted was like whatever you wanted and to be happy or whatever. So I'll talk about like what I thought about like recently, like what TV show it reminded me of, but just play a song. I love this song.
Thank you.
don't know, like that the keys, I guess, just have this effect that just is so dooming, like the world is coming to an end or whatever. But then there's like that lightness. It's like, and I just want to find you, you know what I mean? And I just like, if it reminded me, I don't know if you guys watch Severance. Like, I loved Severance. I'm a big John Turturro fan, and I started it from season one.
Okay.
I just like,
as you showed, you got to start in the beginning.
No, there was a lot of people that jumped on the bandwagon. Season two.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to get into it. He's
a gatekeeper over here.
But
like, Severance is my show, okay? I loved it first.
No, well, I'm just, dude, I've been saying this because I have a song called John Turturro, and I would play it, and I'd be like, you guys know who John Turturro is? And like, there would be silence in the crowd. I was like, well, Google it. And then when I started playing that song, like, you guys know who John Turturro is recently? And they're like, oh, yeah. Like,
I didn't know he was like, in Severance. I love him. That's wild.
Yeah, so John Turturro is in Severance. Anyway, so
and a bunch of other stuff.
He's,
too,
he's the guy that's in all those Adam Sandler movies, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's in a couple,
yeah.
Oh, he's so good.
I thought people would know him from, like, the Big Lebowski. Yeah. He's like the Jesus, the guy in the purple suit. Sorry, go ahead.
Anyways, so in Severance, the guy has to make a choice. Like, the main guy has to make a choice.
Oh, wait. This is a spoiler alert? This is a spoiler alert.
Okay. Should we
Are you guys going to watch
alert?
Severance?
It actually is on our list.
Okay, well, then don't spoil it. Spoil it.
I don't
know. Well, I'm just saying he has to make a choice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think this song could have... The scene is beautiful. Like, at the end of season two, like the last episode... But if they played this song, like, I wouldn't have minded. I was like, listening back, I was like, this would have been a good song choice for that ending scene or whatever.
That makes me excited to watch it.
So, yeah, I don't know. It just reminded me of Severance. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Something cool
that spoiled it.
Oh, sorry. What?
I don't think that spoiled it.
Okay.
No, I think that was so.
Well, just wipe it from your mind.
That was just enough.
No, but now when we get to the end of season two, I'm going to be like, she was right.
They're like, Denise, you need to get in touch with these Apple people and let them know. Something that I thought was interesting, we're big fans of Open Mic Eagle here on the podcast. We've mentioned them, if not in this current iteration of the podcast, for sure in the past. Lately, he's been going on tour with like different, so he's kind of like an indie rapper.
Mm-hmm.
And most recently, he went on tour with Future Islands. And so that was kind of interesting. And that's another guy that's kind of like very eccentric.
Super eccentric.
Yeah. And Oceanator is actually supporting Open Mic Eagle on a few dates on the East Coast this month in August when this episode comes out. So I just thought that was cool. Like a little serendipitous that you brought them on. And then they're also going to be both touring with Open Mic Eagle. And then a couple of episodes ago, we had Future Islands. And then he announced a tour with Open Mic Eagle. So I think we're on the same wavelength with Open Mic Eagle is what I'm trying to say here.
Seriously, bro.
And maybe he should come be on the show.
Yeah.
Definitely.
He's but always welcome on the show. Yeah, you should tag Oceanator.
Yeah.
Also, what was I going to say about Oceanator? It's a small enough band where, like, yeah, you could still go see them, like, at a small place.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, Open Mic Eagle, too. Like, if they're playing a show together, like, it's going to be a great show. And, like, in the grand scheme of things, like, I've looked at, like, numbers, like, on Spotify. And I was like, dude, this is technically, like, a smaller band still. I wouldn't consider them, like, freaking huge or anything. Like, we could totally... just shoot our shot and throw out an invitation.
Shoot it.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Definitely
should. Yeah. Oh, another band he toured with was AJJ, which that was another one that I was like, what the heck?
Oh, yeah.
Because I love AJJ. And then he went on tour with AJJ. And I was like, oh, shit, that's awesome. Anyway, sorry. What did you guys think about the song?
I loved it. It reminded me, definitely like the synths at the beginning are really goth.
Yeah.
And that's like... 2024 was our year of goth. We were like really exploring the breadth of the term goth and like what it meant and what it meant to us. And I think that really matches with the theme, right? Like for better or worse. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a lot of what's in that song, like the light and the dark, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like I think of The Cure when I think of like true
that,
goth.
I was going to mention that this song that we just listened to reminds me of The Cure's most recent album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It also reminds me of the song I really love by Shiny Toy Guns.
Mm.
I can't remember. It's old. Like I was like listening to it a lot when I was like 10. So that was a minute ago.
Yeah.
I'm not 10 anymore. I think it's called You Are the One. Yeah, that's what it is. But her voice also I'm not familiar with this band, but she reminded me a little bit of Nico. Mm. Mixed with there was someone else. I can't remember off the top of my brain now, but Yeah, it was. It's really interesting, this like darkness.
Mm-hmm.
But the vocal is still like really pretty peppy. Yeah. And then when the lower vocals that were like panned came in,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I forget what she's saying, but I almost like jumped. I was like, ah! But like in yeah. in a really good way. Like yeah. it was really chilling. Like I love when it like is panned.
There's a bunch of really interesting vocal stuff going on there. There was like that one part where there are two vocals going.
Yeah, like alternating
time.
Lyrics.
Yeah. Really cool. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I you don't hear that a whole lot. Mm-hmm. And it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I didn't catch that until I was getting the clips ready for the show, because, you know, I'll have like headphones on and stuff.
Right.
And then, so that's one of the things that I love about like getting ready for the podcast and stuff, is like you get to hear the songs in a different light, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, which kind of bums me out, because I'm pretty much deaf in my right ear.
Yeah.
So I'm losing some of that pan effect, you know what I mean? But anyways, but yeah, yeah, no, but I did catch that too. And I was like, oh, that, yeah, perks you up.
Yeah, really fun.
But yeah, that was a banger, Denise. Thank you very much for sharing that. And we have one last question for you guys.
So when you think about success in music, what does that look like for you?
Oh.
I used to think that if I could just get my music on Spotify,
mm-hmm.
I could die a happy man. And I put music on Spotify, and it was actually a lot easier than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I didn't get any streams on it. Mm. And so I was like, you know, you see that less than 1,000 plays.
I love that. I love that.
It's kind of cool. But I remember thinking, if I can just get rid of those and have it say at least 1,000 hits, I could die a happy man. Okay. Now it's an album on Spotify. Okay. Now it's a physical record. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now it's playing a venue that's sold out. Mm-hmm. You know, the target is always moving. And so my concept of success, I think it like, it would like continuously frustrate me, because I'd be like, yeah, well, I finally did the thing, but that's not good enough now. And you do that enough times over 10, 15, 20 years of playing music. Eventually, now I'm in this place where I'm like, success honestly doesn't have anything to do with the music. It's all about the people. So when we play a show and the people come out and they're vibing, that's the success.
Mm-hmm.
That's just where I'm at now with it. I don't know how you feel about that.
That's sweet. I like it.
Like, I kind of couldn't care less about the music at this point, because it also just comes out the way it does now. So I don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. That's really interesting, because like, I feel like I get these, I'm a very ambitious person.
Are you?
It's kind of like a painful quality. And so I'm always trying to have to like check it with like what I actually want and what's reality. You know, like sometimes I'm like, I want to be Lady Gaga, you know, like that's what success would be. And I'm like, right. Is that what I really want? No, I want my career,
mm-hmm.
however it's supposed to happen. And so like the two things I really try and foster are integrity and longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Because for me, that's all that I see. I'm like, okay, the projects that last are the projects that last. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's like if you just, I mean, obviously there's some bands that they have like one hit album and it's like goated forever and it's like in everyone's collection. And obviously there's exceptions to that rule. But like for me, I've decided my goal is to make a masterpiece in my life.
Yeah.
I don't know what it's going to be. I'm not even fully convinced it's going to be music, mm-hmm. but I'm going to keep working in music towards that masterpiece. And I also don't know if I'll be recognized by other people for it being a masterpiece.
Right.
Because like when I look at different music careers, I mean, Ween's a great example and has been super inspiring to me lately, because they've just always done exactly what they wanted and they've mm-hmm. built a really good following and they grow in popularity. I mean, Pixies is another really good example. Like they've always mm-hmm. had a cult following, but they've been getting huge recently because like the music is just better. Same with Modest Mouse. Like mm-hmm. I wasn't even listening to Modest Mouse full albums until like the last year.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, the hits, you know, of them, but like, and that's where integrity is really important to me. Because like I see a lot of people and I'm so curious to watch people's careers, right? Like people will get like this huge breakthrough. But like you wonder if the music is going to last past their lifetime. past this, like, it might be a surge in popular culture. And then, like, then you start asking, like, how is it contributing to the culture?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that's really what I try and focus my ambition on instead of, like, money or fame, because, like, those are the things that follow that.
Yeah.
So
that's
like,
a transactional receipt. Basically.
Yeah, and like it can be healthy to want money and fame. Like,
yeah,
that means you want a platform and you want to be able to afford to make more art, right?
Pretty much.
Like, that's like the real goal. But I try and funnel my ambition. And another big thing for me was reading through. I've been reading through a book of all of David Bowie's written interviews. Mm. And, you know, he's so known for his aesthetics. And a lot of people like jumped on the Bowie bandwagon because of his aesthetics, which are amazing. But in this one interview, they were like, so you did Ziggy, you did Aladdin Sane. What's next? What's next aesthetically for you? And he's like, I don't know. I just go to the music. Mm. And it's like in the music, everything else is born from that. So it's like kind of like a yin yang answer to yours. That it's like, I just try to go into the music. Because that's where I always like to say that we're like stewards of the sound wave. Mm-hmm. The magenta moon wave is this like wave. And I can either be on the wave with all my pals playing the music, making the wave stronger. And that can change the culture. Like we like to call people that comes to our shows the party because it's a party and you have to do your own work to show up at the party, right? Mm-hmm. Like you might... Like, if you don't want to see people of color or queer people, you probably can't come to our shows. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you want to come to the party, you have to, like, get yourself right before you come there. And I think that's where art offers this common ground where we don't have to have a confrontation about it. Because usually when you have the confrontation, people are like, it makes them dig in harder. Mm-hmm. They become more of a bigot.
Yeah.
But like if you offer this awesome place where we can all hang out together,
yeah,
that's the opposite of isolation, then it might be incentive to do the work.
Yeah, I have this feeling lately where I was just saying the other day that we have this team of people that we work with. Videographers, photographers, mixing engineers, mastering engineers, and a visual artist that helps us do our album art and our posters. And it's like so many great people that are these amazing artists that are willing to work with us and collaborate with us and the other people. And to me, that's the measure of success right there is connecting all these people and making stuff together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could look at like what the response is after that. But I'm like, we already won because we're getting to do all this stuff together. I guess that's what you're talking about too, is like really like delving into the art itself. That's and interfacing with that. That's the success right there. So that you get to do it.
Right. And like, I'm a really big fan of Sappho. I don't know if you know Sappho, the poet, ancient Greek poet, really beautiful. Like her work, even in translation, it's just like so fresh. It feels like it's like right now when you read it. But like all of the copies of her poems burnt with the Library of Alexandria.
Oh, damn.
And so followers of Sappho will go into the desert and sift through the sand to try and find lines and fragments.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we have are fragments of her works that these people sifted through sand and ashes to find. And I'm like, that's success to me.
Yeah, right.
Is like something that could touch someone so deeply. Mm-hmm. So everything else, the glitz and glamour, is all distraction from like making something that can shift the frequency forever. Mm-hmm. Right? And if not this lifetime, maybe next one.
There's always the next one.
It's true.
No, yeah, but that was beautiful. And I really love the fact that you guys, the way you mentioned that, like, yeah, Magenta Moon party shows, Magenta Moon shows are just an eclectic collection of people. And I think that's one of the nice things about music, that it's like, if you're just listening to music on your own, in your car, at home, whatever, like that's your own personal connection to the music. But then going out to the shows, that's where you see the plethora of people that enjoy the same music that you're listening to.
Right.
And that's what could open you up to like, oh, well, I must probably get along with these folks because we all came together because of this music.
Yeah.
And so that must feel great for you guys, just having all of these different people just coming together to like party with you. So I don't know. I think that's awesome. I love it. It's really fun.
Oh yeah. Everyone's welcome at the party.
All right. Boy. There you go. Well, if you made it this far, we just want to say thank you. We know there are a million different ways for you to spend your free time. We just want to thank you for spending a few of those minutes with us. If people want to get a hold of you, if they want to know when you guys are playing a show or when you're releasing new music, remind them again, how can they do that?
You can follow us on Instagram at Magenta Moon Party. Our website is magentamoonparty.com. And yeah, I think that's
us.
Yeah. All right. And I'll have links to all of that in the show notes. So, you know, if you're driving or whatever, just hit up lppod.com and you can find the show notes there. And Denise, where can people reach you?
At Deefer Music, DEEFUR Music on Instagram.
All right. And like I said, email is the way to go for the show, feedback@lppod.com. Or you can also hit us up on Instagram at the LPPod. If you want to check out more podcasts that Denise and I have produced throughout the years, head on over to talkingishard.com. And Joey, Elena, thanks again so much. This was so much fun. We loved finally getting to chat with you in a more long form way. And yeah, you guys are welcome back anytime. And we look forward to seeing you guys live again.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, this has been a blast.
Definitely.
Yay.
We did it. Hopefully that wasn't too long.